Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora koutou. Hello everyone, it's Shane Henderson here, your host for this edition of Red Alert Radio. And I have with me here Greg Presland. Say g'day, Greg.
G'day.
Excellent. So this is your West Auckland local government team today. And it's quite a funny thing to be talking about local government on this show, given that we have such success in central government at the moment. But actually we're also going quite well in local as well in Auckland. So we've got a lot of great local issues to talk about today. And I'll just run you through today. We're going to talk about the by-elections coming up. I talked about that last time I was on the show, and now we've got three more by-elections. So it seems like we've got by-election fever, and I know everybody listening's probably pretty excited about that. We're going to talk about the recent storms that affected Auckland, and that was certainly a hot topic for the media in the last couple of weeks. And I've got Greg here, the chair of the Waitakere Rangers Board, to talk about how his area was affected by those storms. Certainly a lot of trees and a lot of things that could get damaged, so we'll have a chat about that. And if there is time, we'll talk about another issue that's been in the news, which is the prospect of large property sales for Auckland Council, and in particular council-owned buildings in Orewa, in Henderson, Takapuna, and a few other places. So that's us, and if we're really running out of time, we've also got some interesting legislation about local government to talk about as well. So plenty of things to talk about in this edition. So we've got three by-elections. Let's talk about these by-elections first and foremost. In the general election for Northcote, we have a by-election coming up with Jonathan Coleman resigning. Greg, how do you think that Northcote by-election is going to go?
You would expect the opposition to win it again. It's been a fairly safe national seat for years. But Shannon Halbert did a good job last time. He cut the majority down to 6,200. If there isn't a Green candidate or a New Zealand First candidate, that's about 3,000 or 4,000 votes. And you never know. By-elections are funny things.
They certainly are funny things. And Shannon hacking and slashing at that majority last time certainly is a good sign, especially given we're actually only 6 months out from the last general election, which it seems like it was a lifetime ago. But Shannon's got good profile there. Shannon Halbert, the candidate for Labor, that of course we endorse and support wholeheartedly. And things are looking good. So there's a national candidate. Have you heard much about him?
Only that he is a economist, and I gather he lives in South Auckland, not in Northcote. But he looks like he's someone with a certain amount of talent, but he's not well known, which is going to be a disadvantage for them.
Yeah, that's certainly the controversy that's been kicking around, and several kind of Northcote residents have had chats to me about that, that they prefer someone that might be a little more homegrown. For what it's worth, I've met the national candidate. I had a debate with him, and he's certainly a nice guy, and we'll see how he goes. He's a fairly young guy as well. It's a young election, so that's quite a cool thing for the country. But we'll see how we go with that one. Also, we've got the Mangikiakia Tāmaki Local Board have a by-election because Joe Bartley has won that councillor seat and has gone up to the council, which is fantastic. So on the Tāmaki side, we have a by-election and we have a Labour candidate. How do you think that's going to go, Greg?
It's a fairly good, solid Labour area, and I would expect that we should be able to win it again. And I understand, I haven't seen the details, but there are a few other candidates, which always helps in terms of vote splitting. So I don't think there'd be any problems there, but you should never take these things for granted.
Sure does. Maria Meredith has won that nomination for Labour and hopefully going to secure that seat on the Tāmaki side. It is a fairly safe Labour area, but if you are listening and you happen to be from that area, you should go and vote. It's very, very important that you do that. And it's actually a reasonably important by-election there that Labour secures that seat so that we can guarantee we've got that chair slot sewn up. It's very important for the future of Auckland, really. And the main event from our perspective as West Aucklanders, of course, is the third by-election, which we'll talk a little bit more about, and that's the Waitakere Rangers Local Board. So, Greg, you're going to go and you're going to have a new colleague.
Yes, the circumstances are very sad. Denise Yates, who's been a member of the board from its inception, she became very ill just after Christmas and died from cancer in January. And so there's the need to replace her. She was one in a million. She was a very good progressive, staunch trade unionist, very proud member of the LGBT BT community and a really staunch environmentalist. So she will be missed, but as always, we need to get on to things and to find someone who will do the same sort of job that she did.
That's right. It's probably a good point for us to just acknowledge publicly again our condolences to everyone, friends and family that knew Denise, who certainly was a soldier for the West for a number of decades, and a loss that we really feel she's very sorely missed in West Auckland to this day. And we both attended the funeral, and it was very moving, and it was great to hear sort of stories about her campaigns and some of the cheeky side of things as well, so that was quite good. So sadly, that is what it is, and now we have a local board by-election. So could you maybe describe the candidates in that race? How are we looking?
Sure. I'm part of the Future West ticket, and Future West is a progressive ticket. It involves Labor Party, the Greens, and also Community Independents. Currently, or up until Denise's death, there were three Labor Party members of the board, two Greens, and Sandra Coney, who was a very, very staunch progressive. So we did very well at the last election and the election before. Our candidate this time is Tiaria Fletcher, who is a resident of Huia. Tiaria has been involved in community organisations in the West for many years, and she's a really great community person. And we really hope to get her elected because she will also bring a diversity of views and approaches to things to the board.
Yeah, that's right. And you were saying about the previous election in 2016 out there in the Waitakere Ranges, where the Future West ticket, Labor, Greens and Independents absolutely thrashed the opposition. A six-blot win. And really, I think that's an endorsement of all the great work that's happening on that Waitakere Ranges local board. I hope I'm not making you blush there, Greg.
No. Always happy to receive accolades.
Great. Just admirers. I forgot to mention that I'm actually the chair of the Henderson-Massey local board, so the neighbours there, and we consider the Waitakere Ranges really the rowdy neighbours that we're having to constantly call noise control on. But at any rate, what do you think are the issues facing the Waitakere Ranges in this by-election? What's the choice out there?
The issues out there tend to be environmental. Our local board area is the home of the Waitakere Ranges heritage area, and that's it's got its own special act of parliament, which is there to give it special environmental protection. And that tends to make everyone into greenies. Everyone's really proud of the area and proud of the act.
That's right.
And so that means that environmental issues tend to be foremost. The two big current issues are curry dieback. We're facing a crisis. We have the worst rate of infection of curry dieback in the country. The latest five-year review of the disease suggested that the rate of spread had doubled in 5 years. And if we don't get on top of it now, then we face the prospect of losing curry within 30 years. Yeah. So council's response to that crisis is one of the big issues. And locals, I believe, will be expecting whoever gets elected to be very staunch on that issue. And the other big environmental issue is the water care proposal for a new water treatment plant in Woodlands Park or Waimea. And locals are very concerned. Up to 4 hectares of bush would have to be cleared to construct the new plant, according to Watercare's initial plans. And there's a deep amount of concern about that.
Mm. So obviously you're going to want someone that has a really deep familiarity with the issues in terms of both the curry dieback and the protection there and the water treatment plant. And Tiari is our candidate for that.
She is, yeah.
Yeah, great.
And local board role, we don't have that much decision-making powers. We have our own budgets to deal with.
That's right.
But otherwise, we need to have loud voices and speak and represent local views as much as we can.
That's right.
I believe Tiaria would be very good at doing that.
Yeah, and I understand Tiaria has a really strong background in domestic violence services and social services, community services. As well, so that's obviously going to be a huge strength, and particularly in terms of Glen Eden, I understand that there are various parts of Glen Eden that have experienced some big struggles and some hard times recently. So would you think that would be an issue as well?
Yes, we've had a recent review done by AUT, actually, and they went through a sociological approach to the area, and they pinpointed places where poverty was a real issue and what the repercussions of that were. And it's a very good document for all elected representatives for the local area to read and to understand.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. And I'd suggest to people out there that you're looking for a candidate that can just step right in, get started with the hard mahi from day one, and work with the team and with the available information. So it seems quite clear to me that you should be supporting Te Ariā Fletcher. That's right, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
I've got one vote, and guess who I'm going to vote for.
Well, living in Te Ariā South, I don't have a vote, but I'll certainly be telling some mates to go and do the same. What are the by-election details?
Papers are distributed around about the 3rd of May. From memory, it's the 28th of May is the last day, and then the count happens, and then we find out.
Beautiful. So 28th of May is May Day this year, really.
Yeah.
Fabulous, yeah. Fabulous. Yeah.
Billboards are up now, and the pamphlets are being ready to be delivered.
Very good. Well, from the whole Labor whānau, we obviously wish Te Ariā the best of luck, as well as Shannon Halpert and Maria Meredith as well. And if you're out there and you actually want to help out, if you're feeling really passionate about this stuff, then just get in touch with your local Labor Party, and there's plenty of stuff that we can put you to work doing. So, moving right along, the hot topic this month really for Auckland has been the recent storms, and there's been plenty of storm damage all across Auckland. There was a particularly huge tree blocking all of Te Aritu Road the next morning, and that was absolute chaos. But I understand that in Waitakere Ranges, the storm damage has been quite extensive. And you've done a lot of work on this issue, actually, Greg. So just wanted to kind of pick your brain about what were the storm issues like in your area?
The consequences were pretty terrifying. As Russell Brown on public address has said, this was a Category 2 storm. A Category 2 storm is meant to deliver some power outages and some disruption. A Category 4 storm, which is the most powerful, that's meant to cause widespread power losses, but this felt like a Category 4 storm. Peak wind was 210 kilometres an hour at Manukau Heads. There are way bigger storms in the world, and if we got whacked with a big storm, there'd be absolute carnage if our infrastructure is that weak that it falls over in a Category 2 storm. Then I'd hate to see what would happen in a Category 4.
Absolutely. And out in the ranges, were there a lot of trees down and things like that? How'd it go?
Yeah, a huge number of trees. Interestingly, mostly exotics. The good old natives tend to keep their roots and stay standing.
Beautiful. That is beautiful.
But the exotics caused a lot of power outages, a lot of power lines down. Piha was without power for about 6 days. Tehenga Bethels was the same. South Titirangi, where I live, much of our area was without power for about 5 days. Mm. So it was an extraordinary amount of damage for what wasn't an easy storm event, but it wasn't by all means the worst sort you can imagine.
Yeah.
And with climate change, these storms are going to become more frequent and happen more often. So I really think we need to review how prepared we are, because it doesn't seem that we are right now.
That's right. It's actually the second big storm event that I can remember within this local government term, because half of New Lynn ended up collapsing about 6 months ago or so. Or it might have even been more now. But there's still damage there now that hasn't been fixed. And like you say, Greg, with climate change, this is going to keep happening, and who knows, it could get a hell of a lot worse. So with Piha and Bethels and those kind of areas being on coastal villages, how did those communities hold up? Did they kind of band together and help each other? You know, what did you see?
They've got really good networks out there. And, for instance, the Bethels Fire Brigade, they just opened up the doors. They had hot water. Locals could come and have a shower, go to the toilet, do those sorts of things. And so the feeling of community was really strong. And that's one of the nicest things to come out of this problem.
Isn't it great? It's Westies helping Westies, eh?
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
we're a different breed.
That's right. And my community of Te Aritu South, it was much the same. You know, people door-knocking each other, people helping each other, giving out candles and all sorts of stuff like that. And just it really brought the community together. And I think that was a positive throughout all of this. Kind of it's good for the heart. It reaffirms that people are really looking out for each other out there. But I've been to a few community events since where people have said, look, everybody's helping out each other and that's all going great. But at the systemic kind of structural end from council, from civil defence, it just didn't seem like Auckland was prepared. So do you feel that Auckland was prepared for this kind of thing?
Not as well as we could be. We had the storm happened on Tuesday night and we had a meeting on Friday. And the meeting, the officers did well to do it, but it should have been a couple of days before. And the amount of damage that was evident on Friday was just quite terrifying. There's no easy solution, but it's the long-term things. It's infrastructure. Piha, their basic problem is that they're just so far away that, and the lines going up there are so fragile that any sort of disruption causes power cuts for days on end. So our villagers need to think about localised power distribution and generation. Piha, with enough solar panels and a couple of turbines, could probably do without the wire going in. And they wouldn't have to worry about the disruption that's caused by these events.
That's right. I guess there is a downside to living in the coastal paradise of Piha, after all. Who would have thought? But I guess, would you see that council and or government could have some sort of role in equipping some of our more isolated communities like this?
We need to talk about resilience, and one of the things Piha needs is a smart energy network where local power that's generated can be distributed.
That's right.
So they're not so reliant on the big generation from outside coming in.
That sounds like a plan. I mean, the technology's out there these days, and certainly other countries are moving rapidly towards the kind of things that we're talking about. And like we were talking before about the Waitakere Rangers, everybody kind of being greenies out there, it seems like there could be some big support for that kind of initiative. Would you kind of suggest other ways forward for council and civil defence in terms of managing this crisis?
As a priority, we need to think about undergrounding. The Waitakere is full of trees. 80% of my ward is covered by trees. So.
That's right.
Tree disruption is going to happen when there's a storm. So you need to make sure that the wiring systems are more resilient and don't fall over every time a tree does.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the big power lines crisscross my electorate as well. You sort of can't walk 100 metres without whacking into a big power pylon in Massey. And there's actually one right next to my house in Te Aritu South, and I hope that's safe for me. We'll see, there might be another by-election at some point. But undergrounding, I think, is something that the council and certainly central government could be looking at, despite the really prohibitive cost. I saw a cost estimate out there about $3 billion to underground all the overground power lines. But at the same time, there's a precedent out there. I do need to shout out to the good community of Mount Roskill that did a lot of work in this kind of area. So you think that undergrounding those power lines might be a good idea?
It is. We need to obviously find an income source to do it.
Yeah.
And part of the problem is the government's changes to the electricity networks back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So you've got to unpick some of the ideology to try and get results that are good for the community, but...
Yeah,
that's what we're here for.
That's the one. That's the one. It seems like we'll spend years just unpicking some of that ideology in a few areas. And I guess council also is not immune to this kind of thing too. Inheriting a super city where large parts of the city were run by, shall we say, not so progressive people. And so there's a lot for us to unpick even at a local level. But we thank you for letting us do that. That's great. And just the last point, I guess, on the storm. So you're saying this might keep happening because of climate change. Do you think that local government has a role in addressing climate change?
I think it's more and more important for us because the consequences are very clear. I mean, just your roads by the sea, which are going to get washed out. Suddenly there's going to be a need for council to do something about those.
Yeah.
In my local ward... At Huia, there's a seawall that's been washed out basically through increased ocean activity.
Wow.
So that's something we've had to bear the cost of and plan for the future for.
Goodness, that'd be a pretty bad day to wake up to find that happen. Goodness me. And the other thing that's been suggested through particularly a community event in Te Aritu Peninsula that I attended recently, that maybe civil defence doesn't have it quite right in terms of people meeting up and there being a central location where volunteers can come to that want to help out, and that where you can get information about the latest events of the storm and things like that. Social media is doing a pretty good job of that, but our elderly community in particular were left kind of literally and figuratively in the dark in Henderson Massey. Yeah. What do you think?
I agree about social media. Good old Facebook out west, we've got a number of community Facebook pages, and they were the best way I found to get information out. Council needs to be able to adjust more quickly, I think, and use those different media in terms of getting information out to people. Part of the problem, though, is, for instance, at Tehinga Bethels, they've got appallingly bad broadband.
Yeah.
It's Burkina Faso quality.
Wow.
And the other problem is power goes out and there goes your internet feed. So what
Absolutely.
Do you do then?
Absolutely, yeah.
So social media's got a big role to play, but we obviously need a number of different channels to use.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's a really good point you make about how fast-moving it is. They say if you want to get some news, don't bother going to the news websites, go straight to Twitter, and then you'll find out what's happening. Yeah. Council could probably adjust to that brave new world a little more. So that's us on the storms, really. Is there anything else you kind of wanted to add about all that?
Just that I think it's really important for council to do a review and work out what it did well and work out what it needs to do better next time, because there will be a next time.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I have so many residents contact me all the time about how we handled the storms, and that's great. Feel free to keep contacting. But I always just say, look, we've got to get this review in because we've got to know the full information. So we're eagerly awaiting to hear a lot more about how it all worked out. So we've got a bit of time left. Another topic that's pretty close to the hearts of both of us West Aucklanders is the proposed property sales for Auckland Council. We've both taken a pretty public stance on this. But basically the proposal is to sell a bunch of council buildings that are currently being operated for staff in various places, and one of which is Henderson. Maybe you could kind of comment a little bit more about that. How does your board feel about it all?
Sure. I feel quite fatherly about it, because when I was on council, I was one of the councillors who voted for the development, and the theory was it was going to be used to make the train system work better. It was smack bang on top of the Henderson train station. It was a statement of intent that we need to build our cities around our transport mode. And so I was really disappointed that the suggestion came out that it should be closed. I think the decision's very short-sighted. When the City Rail Link goes through, Henderson and downtown are going to be very easy to get between, so why shouldn't downtown put some of Auckland Council workers out west?
Yeah, that's right.
There's a couple of other aspects to it. First one is it was a civic place creation exercise, and by selling it, you get rid of that. And the other part is, much as I love Henderson, it needs a little bit of extra help right now.
That's right.
And taking workers away from there with their spend will only make things worse.
Yes.
So I think it's a retrograde decision. I think those buildings are ideally placed and should be used as much as possible.
Yes. Very close to my heart. I first started working in Henderson at the age of 17 and still working there at the age of 31. Lived there, frequented there all my life, and have fought several elections on Henderson needing a lot of help. So it's certainly a very very passionate topic for me.
It's the spiritual home for all Westies.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Although Glen Eden's a mighty fine place as well, I'm sure you'll agree.
Almost as good as Henderson.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, one of the issues that we had with the property sales was really a lack of information that we'd received. To this day, I still haven't seen a dollar figure or a business case that would allow us to kind of agree to this. And it got to a point where I'd walk down the main street of Henderson and people were stopping me saying, look, we're going to chain ourselves to the building and we're going to march along the streets. And you know how Westies can be like, right? So that's that really. I mean, basically, when we're talking about property sales in Henderson, we're really talking about three different buildings. One of them is the circular building, where the council holds all of its really formal meetings. The other one is a big rectangular one that kind of shoots out from the circular one. That's where all the staff are. And there's a third building that's not connected to the other two, which is called Central One, and it's kind of the square one. I know this is not great radio, me describing various buildings, but I think it's important to make that distinction, because the circular building in particular has a huge importance for West Aucklanders. Isn't that right, Greg?
Yes, and it has two magnificent po given by Te Karo Amaki.
That's right.
And to think about selling those would be such an insult to them that we should just not think about it. Just one other comment is that this shows up process issues for the super city. You know, back when that building was built, it was a democratic decision by elected representatives. This decision to sell is being made by a CCO without real democratic input so far. Councillors, I believe, are trying to grapple with the issue now, but it's got a long way without there being any democratic oversight.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's really accumulation of a feeling that the West Auckland is getting a little left behind and needs more investment from various places. Our stance on the board has always been pretty consistent, that the circular building has a really huge spiritual importance for all West Aucklanders, particularly for Te Karo Amaki as well. That's really important that we bring that up. And the other two buildings are really kind of underutilised, and as a board we're really interested in seeing figures, seeing more detail, and we wouldn't agree to anything without a massive, huge economic benefit to Henderson and a social benefit as well, because we're quick to count economic costs, we're not so quick to count social costs too. So we'd want any kind of proposed thing to massively benefit Henderson. And would that be kind of something you'd agree with?
Yes, we looked at your resolutions and we backed them to the hilt.
Oh, you're too nice.
And another part of the problem is that Auckland Transport moved most of their workers out of there. And again, that was not a democratically controlled decision. It was made by a CCO. They've gone downtown into more expensive premises. For the life of me, I don't know why a transport entity shouldn't be based on top of a railway station.
Yes, just
as a statement of intent.
That's right. That's right. And again, it's a question of dollars and cents. If we're looking at moving, potentially building new buildings, we need to see that it's also going to benefit not just Henderson, which is really my big thing, but also the ratepayer in general, that it's not going to cost them money. We'd have to gain money rather than lose money. So that's still ongoing, and over the next month or so, you'll probably hear a lot more about that through the news media.
Oh, let me know when you're going to join up to the barricades and I'll be there.
Fantastic. I hope it doesn't come to that. We'll see how we go. Just while we've got a couple of minutes left, I'll just raise with everybody that there is a couple of important laws looking to be passed at the moment. One of them is to restore the four wellbeings to local government, and the other one is to allow council to experiment with online voting. This will be something that your board would be pretty into, you reckon?
Oh yes, the four wellbeings come straight out of Eco City, really. It was work that was done by Bob Harvey back in the 1990s, and it then influenced the way that the government changed the Local Government Act. So, yeah, we're fully in support of that.
Great. Westies united.
Yeah, environment and community are just as important as infrastructure and finances. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And online voting, you think that's going to benefit the people of Waitakere?
It's going to happen. I mean, I've taken part in a few private online votes, and they're very easy, very straightforward. Part of the reason that local government voting is not as high as it could be is because it's so complex.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, same. I've always been really critical of the postal ballot. I think that it's really inconvenient for people. So any way that we can reduce barriers, that's surely going to help something. So that'll be great. So we'll see how that goes as well, and submissions for that open soon. But anyway, let's get out of here. Thanks for listening in today. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, thank you, Shane.
Yeah, g'day, thanks. And this has been Red Alert Radio for another edition. So cheers, everybody. Yours in solidarity. See you later.
Get together next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.